Hello, Rich Girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust fund you wish you were born with. Today's guest, I'm obsessed with her, Jessica Carwat. She's calling in from Spain, and she is an expert in nervous system regulation. Yes, this is the trendiest thing. Everybody's talking about it online. And if you take an old money mindset, you know that I have a framework for helping you expand your nervous system capacity around money and how it all actually connects. All about emotional regulation, all about holding, earning, scaling, building. But Jessica's teaching style around how some women build wealth from regulation and others try to build it from survival, and how those are two completely different experiences. So if you've ever made money and then immediately lost it, sabotaged your success, or totally frozen, or if you've ever felt anxious the moment things start going right because you think the other shoe's about to drop, or if you've ever hit an income ceiling you couldn't explain, reached your limit, burnt out, fizzled out, fell down, this episode is for you. Welcome our guest, Jessica Carwat. I have been binge watching you. I've learned so much from you. Can you tell us how you learned everything that you know about the nervous system and money and getting famous?
Yes. Amber, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Let me tell you the story of when I realized how success and money was so deeply connected to my nervous system, which happened in my first business. So my first business, when I started it a couple of years ago, was all about women's health. And, you know, I was focused on helping women heal themselves from the inside out through nutrition and training and all those things. And at that time, I was already a little bit aware of trauma and all of the kind of stuff. So I was doing this type of work with my clients. But what happened to me was very interesting, which at that time, I didn't make the connection. And that was, I hit my highest cash month in my business. And I remember I was sitting there, I was in Spain at that time too, and I was calculating the numbers on my sheet, and I had to like triple check, because I was like, what did I just make? I couldn't believe it. Like I couldn't believe it, seeing that number coming from really not a lot of money. Like, my parents are immigrants. I never saw money. I never experienced wealth in any way. Seeing that number, instead of celebrating, instead of feeling very excited, my body went into panic. I remember sitting in the car and my partner wanted to celebrate. He's like, this is amazing. Like, we need to celebrate. And I'm sitting in the car and all I'm feeling is unease. My whole body is shaking. I'm starting to think now I have to like work even harder to feel worthy of that money. And then what happened is after that, my money went down. I had a full on collapse. And it took me a while to understand that that was my nervous system not feeling safe with the money that I made.
Can you give our listeners a framework? We've heard so much about regulating your nervous system. What even is your nervous system? And why does it react unconsciously to things that happen in your life?
Your nervous system is constantly scanning for potential threats in the environment, in and out. And your nervous system is unconscious. So it's not something that you are necessarily aware of, but it's something that your body is doing all the time. And so to give you, you know, the context of why my body had such a strong reaction to that high cash month was because I never had any positive connection with money. Growing up, there was a lot of lack. There was a lot of fighting about money. Mm-hmm. Money never felt like something really, really good. It always felt like something that I wanted to avoid, that I always had to hoard, that I always had to make sure of, you know, to not spend. It was just this thing that caused so much stress that was given by my parents to me. Now, this was something that I tried to outthink myself of, right? On a mindset level, I understood money mindset work, but it wasn't changing for me. No matter how much I was trying to think myself into a positive relationship with money, it wasn't happening. And every time it came to money stress, lack of money, spending too much, my body had such a strong reaction to it that I just couldn't positively think myself into changing. And so what I had to understand is that, and this is what I want everyone to really understand when it comes to nervous system and money. I've seen a lot of content about nervous system work being in the moment work, mm-hmm. right? So like, oh, I'm feeling uneasy. Let me take a couple of deep breaths. Let me go on a hike. Let me regulate in the moment. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's going to regulate you in the moment, but real nervous system work is getting to the root of this regulation. Going back to when you were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, like in my case, where for the first time I saw my parents interact around money, when I learned unconsciously that money is not safe. This is how you regulate in the long run. It's not just, hey, let me take a couple of deep breaths. This is great, but it's not going to have the long-term effect so that you actually heal the trigger that causes that dysregulation.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That is something that I talk about all the time. And I think it's such a great place to start because when you're dysregulated and you're in that fight or flight, and I want to go back to talking about your experience in that moment too, when you had your highest cash month. But when you're in the moment, I think of that as like, you're in the Super Bowl. So if you haven't gone to practice and played all of the games all season long, you're showing up to the big game, the moment where it all matters, and you have not done any practice. I totally agree with you that if you want to learn nervous system regulation, you have to be doing the work outside of the big moments.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit more, because you mentioned when you were in the car with your partner, you're celebrating, you're feeling panic, you're noticing things like this feels dangerous, but what did this feel like in your body? Like, what are the somatic experiences that are happening for you that other people might be able to recognize in themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, thinking back, I wish I would have known this because it would have completely changed my life. I would have turned everything around. And of course, I'm grateful it happened because otherwise I wouldn't be doing what I do now.
Right.
It's based on that experience why I do what I do now, because I want more women, more people to know about this, truly.
Yeah.
In that moment, when I calculated the numbers and my partner was like, let's celebrate, and I did not feel any joy. I felt deep within, I didn't deserve this. I needed to work harder. Because mm-hmm. I always learned, when you work hard, you make a lot of money. So when mm-hmm. I made that money, a part of me felt like, now I need to prove it. And
yeah.
So I would go into people-pleasing. I would go into over-delivering to my clients now. I would go into working even more. Because now I needed to match that the income was truly something that I deserved. So it was not just, of course, that visceral, like my body was just like mm-hmm. not feeling good, but also the thoughts that just like started to come up. And it's so interesting because when we look at the nervous system, my body clearly was in a fight or flight, right? Clearly mm-hmm. was in a sympathetic response. My body clearly did not feel safe with this. And then I stayed there. I fed even more into that. And then what ended up happening is I went into a complete freeze mode. And this is what you see when you stay in fight or flight for too much and your body is like, I can't take this any longer. You move into freeze, you move into overwhelm, you move into now I can't move at all. And exactly yeah. a month after that, I remember I was in New York. I was by myself. And I remember I went into a complete shutdown. My friend, who's a psychologist, I called her. And I was like, I am sleeping all the time. I have no energy. I love to work out. Like, I work out every day. Like, this is my thing. I couldn't even do a simple 5-minute workout at home. I would like crash. I was the most pessimistic you would have ever encountered me. Like, it was really, really bad. And my friend, she said to me, you're depressed. And I'm like, I am. Like, I fell into a complete hole, complete depression. And I didn't see mm-hmm. a way out of it anymore because my nervous system was so much in fight or flight that it just wanted to protect me. And that's what happens. And that's what you see with a lot of people in general when they're in this like constant pushing, grinding, hustling, fight or flight. And then eventually your body is like, well, now that you're not giving us a moment to rest and slow down and trust that everything is fine, we will put you into shutdown mode so that we can take a moment to actually like get you back to normal. And this is what you see quite a lot. People jump in between those two when their nervous system is dysregulated.
I've been in this state before myself. And what I think is really interesting about this is that high achieving women are somebody that you speak directly to in your content. And I think a lot of high achieving women are still dysregulated because their trauma is disguised as hustle. So how does this show up when you're not in complete freeze mode, but you mentioned some of this, like the people pleasing and the overgiving. How does this show up for a high achieving woman who's still dysregulated?
Yes, I love this question so much. And I want to bring burnout into the picture too, because a lot mm-hmm. of people think burnout is caused by working a lot, which is not necessarily true. Burnout is caused by your state of being as you're doing the things that you're doing. a lot of the times, you know, women, when especially we have this so much in us, right? We have this like people pleasing, overgiving, good girl syndrome, all of the types of things that, you know, we as women have to heal. Especially if we go into business now and, you know, you want to show up, you want to put content out there, you want to grow your business, you will be faced with all of these things internally that you didn't even know that they were there. But then you start to question, did I trigger someone now? I want to make sure that this post doesn't get bad comments or whatever, wherever your mind, your nervous system is going. We have to understand that at the end of the day, what I want people to do when they're regulating themselves and when they want to really step away from this, like I call it the Russian woman syndrome often, right? Because as women, we tend to rush. We tend to go, go, go. We tend to try to fit into the masculine way of doing things, which is not meant for us. And then on top of that, we have all these high expectations. And so the thing that I want everyone to do is to notice your state of being as you're doing the things. As you are working, as you're writing that email, as you're recording that video, as you're answering your client, are you stressed? Are you triggered all the time? Are you rushing? Are you going from one thing to the other, like, oh my God, I don't have time. Oh my God, there's so much to do. Oh my God, this client is annoying me right now, but I have to respond. Or are you trusting that you have enough time, that you're safe, that everything is working out just fine, that you can trust yourself, your ability, your knowledge? That is really the difference. And this is something that I really had to learn, to trust myself and to notice my state of being as I'm taking the action. Because how much energy does it really require if you are constantly stressed, if you're constantly in this state of never enough? Never enough money, never enough clients, never enough visibility, never enough all of that, which gets you stuck in this loop of always feeling like it's not enough. And your nervous system, again, is scanning. So your nervous system is always going to scan for what it knows to be true. So for example, if you have that belief that money is scarce, you never have enough money, your nervous system will keep showing that to you. And so whatever you feed, and this is where, of course, we come in with the belief work and the stories that we tell ourselves, at the end of the day, the way that you really regulate is to notice the story that comes up as you're getting triggered, right? So let's say, for example, you look at your bank account and you see the number decreasing on your bank account and you get triggered and your body goes into panic. And then you tell yourself a story, oh, I'm just not good with money. It's never going to happen for me. I'll never be rich. I'll never be all of these things. That story right there, your job is to notice that story and to create a new story so that you can feed that new story to your nervous system. And the next time you are going to be in that situation, stop yourself and rewrite that story. Because the more that you start doing that and you start looking for proof that it is possible for you, that you are this or that, whatever it is that you're working on, then your nervous system will start scanning for the good things.
Yeah. And I mean, this is so real. This is so real. I have rushing woman syndrome. I am diagnosed fully chronic. Like, that is one of my biggest challenges, is slowing down. And I want to connect this to something tangible. As a person who constantly feels like I don't have enough time, I want my listeners to imagine, like, pretend you're my client or my team member. And if I'm showing up to a call with you and I'm frantic, I'm like, hey, let's get through our list. Let's go. Da, 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 da. Okay, got to go to the next one. Thanks. Bye. And I'm rushed and I'm brusque and I'm not spending time with you. How are you going to feel as my client? How are you going to feel as my team member? You're probably not going to feel very important. You're probably not going to feel very cared for. You're not going to feel like I'm present with you. And as a leader of my company, those are the things that my team members and my clients deserve from me. Your partner deserves that from you. Your pets deserve that from you. So when you're in this rushing woman syndrome, which I can speak from experience, I've never heard anyone say it that way, Jessica, and it's literally a chronic disease. When you're rushing through life, everybody picks up on your vibes. And that translates to, does your team member enjoy working for you? Do they feel like you've seen them and spent time with them? And do you feel like they're present? Do your clients feel cared for? If they don't feel cared for, they're not going to renew with you. They're not going to want to work with you. So it's these little things that kind of stack up in the way that we operate. And I also wrote down good girl syndrome because I also suffer from that as well. But what you said is so important is the noticing. We had a guest, my friend Shannon Weinstein, on this podcast many moons ago,
And she taught me something too, which is as a business owner, if you have any, like, for example, she would say, if you're not paying yourself enough or you're not earning enough, a lot of people will use these lenses to then look at everything in the business as if it's not enough. And that means that you're hustling, you're rushing, you are not trusting, you are a little bit more skeptical, you're not as opportunistic. And I mean that in like entrepreneurial mindset. But when you're paying yourself enough and you feel like everything's good, you start to multiply more money and attract more money because you're looking for the opportunities. You're creating the opportunities. Your nervous system is in a state to where you can be expansive, creative, collaborative, all these other things. So it took me a long time to connect. What does this really mean? Like, how does my nervous system connect to money in practical ways? That's how it does. If you don't feel like you have enough, you will walk around this world acting like you don't have enough. And that's going to cause you to act in ways that will either attract or repel people, attract or repel clients, attract or repel relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, there is, I think the thing that's also really important to remember is how we're all so different and that different things are going to work for different people. Whenever, for example, you know, I'm on TikTok or I'm on YouTube and I'm talking about these things and people ask me, so what's the formula? Like, how do I do this now? I can give that to you. But at the end of the day, you have a very unique experience with money, with yourself, with your body even. Like, to take it a step further and to make it practical in a sense of understanding the nervous system on a body level is when you are rushing, what you were saying, right? When you are rushing through life, when you're not present with other people, you're not present with yourself, which also means that you actually aren't aware of your body and your body's signals. And so then you are in turn disconnected from yourself. And when you're disconnected from yourself, it will take you to a certain point, but eventually your body is going to scream. It happened to me, right? Like you can ignore, you can ignore, you can ignore, suppress, like, okay, whatever, I'm fine. And then eventually your body's going to give you the signs. And so the number one job when it comes to wanting to regulate yourself around money is to actually start to become very aware of your body. And very aware of, you know, the signals that your body is giving you and how your body's responding. And when you don't know how to do that or you haven't practiced that, or for example, I used to be a rushing woman. And the worst thing for me at that time was when someone told me meditation is great. And I was like, sit in silence for 5 minutes.
I could never.
I cannot do that. That was the worst thing for me. I was like, forget about that. Of course, like, not everyone can meditate because it can actually cause more dysregulation if you don't feel safe within your body, right? So that's also important to mention. But it does start with feeling safe, feeling yourself first.
I love that. You said noticing, and I talk a lot about this too, just noticing what's going on. Can you talk a little bit about trauma and how that lives in the body? You talk about that on TikTok a lot. And you guys, I'm going to link her contact information in the show notes. Like, just wait till you get on her TikTok page. You're going to go on a scroll hole. There's so much good information. But Jessica, tell us here, what emotions live in the body? What does it mean when you say trauma lives in the body? What does that mean?
Yes. In order for me to go there, I also want to talk a little bit more about trauma and what trauma actually means. Because oftentimes we can hear trauma.
Good idea.
Right. And we can think, oh my God, like, it's this horrible, horrible thing that happened to me. But trauma is not just that. Trauma is, imagine that you have an experience and your body didn't know how to process it in that moment. So your body locks in, stores the emotions that weren't able to be processed at that time. When we look at trauma, it's very individual too. Like, yes, of course, you have those big, big traumatic experiences. That is one way of looking at trauma. But trauma is also very individual. Amber, you and I, we could have the very same experience. It might be traumatic to you. And for me, it did nothing, had no impact at all, because we are, of course, individual beings. But the small things that happened to you that really formed you, like, you know, you were, I don't know, 7 years in school and this girl laughed at you because of your hair. That can be traumatic. And that can now you know, your parents then on top of that told you to not express anger because anger is a bad emotion. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not allowed to be angry. Just like, forget about it. And now you learn as a 7-year-old child, okay, so I have this experience. I do want to feel angry. I do want to express it, but I'm not allowed to. So let me just like not do that. And so now you learn, A, certain emotions are bad. So you never learn how to express them. And B, Now, when you have an experience and your body doesn't know how to fully feel that experience to close that trauma loop, as I like to say, those emotions get stuck in the body. And when those emotions get stuck in the body, they lead to limiting beliefs, blockages, the way that you see the world. Your body is shaped by those two, right? Chronic pain, digestive issue. Like, I had very, very bad hormonal acne. I had horrible digestive issues. I had very, very bad periods. I had an eating disorder for many, many years, bulimia, all of that. And that was a nervous system trauma thing. I didn't heal my trauma. And so my nervous system was very dysregulated and my body was showing that, right? In all these different ways. And so in order for us to understand trauma, it's really looking at understanding we're all individual beings. We all have different experiences. It's not always the bad thing that happens, but it's your response to it and your body not being able to process it. Now, I also want to just say that your body's very, very intelligent. So your body did what it needed to do at that moment. It protected you.
Right.
So often what I hear is people, they judge themselves for it. Like, why can't I let the experience go? It's still in my body. But your body needed to do that so that you were protected. So that also really helped me when I was doing inner child work and healing myself. And I still do that to that day. I am kind to myself. And I know my body does best it could at that time because it just wanted to protect me.
I think that is so beautiful. And I've never heard it put that way so plainly before, but it feels like a permission slip to me. Your body didn't know how to process it in the moment. And that's like, if you can look back on yourself like a child and, you know, oh my gosh, poor little me, I just didn't have the vocabulary or the skill set or the awareness of what was going on and how to handle it. And it's that, gosh, you know, we don't have to blame ourselves for that. And it's not that we were behind or something terrible happened. It's just, we didn't know what to do with this emotion. And, you know, I struggled with this and have worked through this in therapy quite a bit. Like, I had a lovely childhood. I loved my childhood and loving parents, but I have a lot of baggage and a lot of trauma because I was put in a lot of adult situations. I was an only child. I was traveling all over the world with my family, and I just didn't have the emotional capacity or maturity to process a lot of what was going on. So I experienced a lot of it traumatically because I just didn't know what was going on. That is a permission slip, Jessica. And I think a lot of people will find value in that. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I love what you said. I also had a beautiful childhood. Like, I know my parents did the best that they could. It's also my parents. I'm also an only child, right? It was my parents' first time also, like, being on planet Earth and having a child and having to, like, my parents were super young.
Right.
Immigrants.
Yeah.
Moving from Poland to Germany, trying to figure it out too. My mom was 19 when she got pregnant with me, right? So I know that a lot of the things that my parents did or said, it wasn't because they intentionally wanted to hurt me. It was because they really tried their best. But now, as the adult that we all are, as we're listening to this, we can heal those things, right? Just because you had that experience that made you believe certain things about yourself and the world, and if you're good enough or if you're not, doesn't mean that you have to keep living with that, and doesn't mean you have to judge anyone for that. Like, that's also something that I really had to learn, is to really take self-responsibility and say to myself, Jess, like, your parents did the best that they could. This is not about judging them. This is not about blaming them. This is about really now me being the adult in my little girl's life. Now me parenting her, telling her all the things that she needed to hear back then, giving her the permission to cry and scream and allow that anger to move through the body rather than continuing to suppress the things that I didn't know how to feel in a safe way.
And let's talk about that. What is processing the trauma as an adult actually look like? Is this journaling for 50 hours a day? Is it deep breaths? Like, what are we doing to process this trauma, Jessica?
Yes. So this is actually my signature method that I use. So I love it so much. Like, it completely changed my life. We first reveal. So the first step is we look at revealing the wound. Okay. So for example, this could look like I'm leading you, like, let's say, for example, Amber, you and I, we do this together, and I would first lead you into meditation. And I would ask you, hey, tell me about a current block that you're experiencing in your life. Like, tell me, what is it right now that you feel like, oh, this is going on? I actually feel like no matter how hard I try, my income is not increasing. Let's say it's that, right? Let's say for the last year, your income is not increasing. It's been staying the same. And how no matter how hard you try, it's not growing. So I'm like, okay, interesting. So how does it make you feel? And then you can tell me, you know, I actually feel this and that. I'm feeling not good enough. I feel like this is never going to happen for me. And then I ask you on a bodily level, on a somatic level, I'm like, okay, where in your body do you feel that? So let's say you tell me, oh, I feel it in my heart. Like I really feel it in my heart right here. And then what I would do is I would ask you, so when was the first time you felt this? And then people are all of a sudden like, oh my God, I was 5 years old and my dad told me that he doesn't love me, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then we start to reveal. We're like, oh, so the block right now that you're having, your body still remembers that wound that was created when you were 5 years old. Okay, interesting. Then we go to the healing part, which is I do somatic work. I do subconscious reprogramming. And a somatic work looks like this. There are three core emotions that we have that we express and feel most of our life through, which is anger / fear, sadness, and grief and pleasure. So now what we do is we bring that emotion to the forefront. And because in that moment, it was a traumatic experience, hence the body could not feel those emotions and release them because emotions are energy in motion. They just need to be felt and released through the body, right? That's all that it is. If we fully feel an emotion, it only lasts 90 seconds in the body. But often we don't know how to feel it. We don't know how to process it. We don't know how to release it. And so it stays sometimes for hours, sometimes for weeks, sometimes for years. And so now what we do is we move through those three core emotions. We first allow ourselves to express that anger that we weren't allowed or we didn't know how to feel. So we express it through however your body wants to do it. Screaming, hitting the pillow, stomping, hitting the air, whatever you got to do, you got to do. Then we move through sadness, however your body wants to express that sadness, through crying, through holding yourself, through crawling on a like a bowl on the floor and just like completely not being able to function for a moment, right? And then we want to close it up with pleasure, which is really important that it closes up with this emotion too. And when we look at these emotions, often as kids, we have learned, oh, you know, again, don't be angry, don't be sad, and even joy. A lot of the times, we didn't have the full permission to feel that because this is something, a big wound that I had to heal. Whenever, for example, I felt joy in my life, something bad would follow afterwards. And so I remember many, many moments in my childhood where I was happy and then something bad would happen. So my system now has learned, don't be too happy because something bad is going to follow. So that's why pleasure is really important that we also learn how to feel it and express it. So now we have reveal, heal. Then we go into expand. So this is where we now ask ourselves, who am I if I'm no longer the person without the wound? Because often, and this is the identity work, if we've been this person now with the wound for so long, who are we really if the wound no longer exists, if we fully let it go? So this is what I see. Often people are very, very much focused on the healing, but not on the next step. Okay, who are you now if this is no longer you?
Yeah.
Right. So then we go into the identity, into the self-image. And then, and this is extremely important, and you probably have heard me talk about this on TikTok, holding. Now we need to increase our capacity and what it means to actually hold this new level of self, of money, of wealth, of success, of visibility. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to reveal, heal, and now become this person. But what does it mean to actually hold this new level of self now? So these are the four steps.
I'm obsessed. The holding is the place that I have been exploring with you on TikTok and for myself. I recently had an experience in my own business that really pushed me to my limits. I made the biggest investment I've ever made in my business, a six-figure investment. And when I tell you, even just seeing it on a spreadsheet of the money flowing out threw me into a spin. Of course, I always talk about, you know, expanding capacity with money. And you know, if you don't manage $1,000 well, it's going to be harder to learn to manage $10,000 well and $100,000 well and so on and so forth. But even for me in this situation, I had all of those, I would call them more animalistic fears and scarcity. And what if this doesn't work out? And am I going to be able to sell as much as I want to? And all of these fears come up. So can you talk us through some practices for that expanding capacity as we are faced with our limits and our edges as we're growing businesses and relationships and all the things?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, congratulations. That is very exciting for you, right? Being able to go there and expand on that level. The way that I like to call this is dancing with the edge. It's not making the edge wrong. The edge, that fear that you experienced, is completely normal. But how mm-hmm. can you hold yourself through that fear as it's happening? Often we feel the fear and then we either retract or we make the fear wrong. We go into judgment. And when we go into judgment, yeah. our nervous system now experiences the situation as a threat. So one thing that we can do is hold ourselves in it. And you're just experiencing that sensation of like, oh my God, this feels so uncomfortable being here. It feels so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's fine. And noticing, giving that sensation on a scale from 1 to 10, the intensity. How intense does it feel right now as I'm feeling the sensation? Let's say it's a 7. Okay, let me stay here. Is the sensation moving? Is the sensation moving to a different part of my body? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Most of the time it is. Is it going up in terms of intensity? Is it going down? And staying there, what you're doing is now you're teaching your nervous system, you are safe despite you feeling the fear. Because we've never learned how to do that. I know it might sound very woo-woo. It might sound too easy. But this is the thing that often we're then like, okay, what is the tool? Let me take a couple of deep breaths. Let me go on a hike.
Right.
Let me do something else.
Yep.
Let me get confirmation from my partner that I did the right thing. And then we're yep. outsourcing our safety to outside of ourselves. Can you feel safe when you're with yourself and you're feeling it and you're dancing with the edge and you train yourself, right? Maybe in the beginning it's 30 seconds and then you're like, okay, that's too much. I'm going to go do something else now. The next time it's going to be a minute. The next time it's going to be 2 minutes. The next time it's going to be 3 minutes. But it's really teaching your nervous system, I just did this decision and I can hold it. And then you can tell mm-hmm. yourself, see, I'm safe. Nothing bad happened.
That's so beautiful. It's so what you just said, Jessica, of like the, let me go journal about it, hike about it, you know, call a friend about it. All of these things that we do, again, as high performing, rushing women through life. And what we just need to do is the most simple thing is sit with it and feel with it. And I want to anchor that in and underline it for myself as well as the listeners. It's retraining your body to feel safety with this stretch, with this edge. And it's something that I think about a lot because, you know, as we talk about the steps in your process, the reveal, the heal, the expand, and the holding, there's jumping around all the time, right? Like you're going to go from one to the other. And the identity piece for me is really interesting because I often, and I hear this a lot from our listeners, like a lot of us are always in the middle because we always have a new goal and we have some new place that we're trying to stretch to and a new identity we're trying to try on for size, but we're working through it and holding ourselves as we grow to that next identity. But when I think about how, and this is, you know, kind of the crux of the Old Money podcast, it's like when you're raised in a family that has money and you learn to move with money and you see that modeled by your parents differently, you hear the conversations, you hear about the big investments, it becomes normalized for your nervous system so that when you are an adult, it's already in you. You understand it, you've seen it, you have evidence that it's safe and all of these things. So how do wealthy women regulate differently, or how do they have more regulated nervous systems, or what did they learn subconsciously when they were children around money?
I love this. And I love really also showing that contrast because I think it is important. And I remember actually, I'm going to give the example of my ex-boyfriend. He was a lot wealthier than, I mean, I wasn't wealthy. I had no money, right? I was like literally a broke student. And his parents, you know, had their own company, and we dated for like 2 years. And during this time, it was very interesting to see him. And I know he's a man, but I feel like it's universal because when you grow up around money and you never have that, I remember he would judge me for trying to be more, you know, saving around money and being more cautious around spending. And he would not ever think about it, ever. Like, he would buy me, and I didn't even ask for it, right? I was like, I was still very much like, I didn't want anything, but he would like buy me this and buy me a new laptop and buy me all these things. And I just remember feeling very uncomfortable. I felt like it was attached to something too. So that is also what was very interesting for him.
Interesting.
He was just like, oh, that's just my life. Like whatever I want, I can get. And for me, I felt like I needed to deserve it. I needed to justify it. I needed to give something back in a certain way. And it was very interesting to see that dynamic so much because for those 2 years, I had a very different life. And when, you know, it wasn't that I needed that necessarily. It was very interesting because at that time I didn't understand. I was just like, well, I'm the girlfriend and I'm here and things are paid for me. I guess that's normal. But it's never something that gave me that safety though. Like, I still didn't feel safe. Whereas for him, was just his normal life. And so what we need to understand is that, of course, it's going to change everything, the way that you spend, the way that you see other people, the way that other people might see you. So I think for wealthy women, the thing that they need to regulate themselves about is how they think other people see them. And I do think often it's also feeling like they probably need to prove that they know what they're doing. So, for example, if you have your own business and you come from a wealthy family, what is the first thing that people think about? Oh, of course, like, you know, she probably has the family business. Things were given to her, handed to her. And they have a different way of this regulation because it's more, I think, based on perception, what people think. And they need to prove themselves in a different way, right? And they need to, and that depends, of course, on the woman, right? If they want to be associated with the family or not, if they want to do it themselves or not. And neither of that is wrong. But I do think their way of looking at life is different in terms of the way that they need to, you know, I don't like the word prove themselves, but I feel like a lot of women do struggle with that when they come from wealth.
That's so interesting. And it makes me think of, I always see this meme on Reddit or whatever, and it's trying to knock down entrepreneurs. And one of the lines is like, you know, Jeff Bezos was gifted $100,000 by his mother to start Amazon, like, must be nice. Yeah. And my retort to that is always, okay, if I gave you $100,000 today, would you create an Amazon?
Exactly.
Like, what he did with that was insane, right? But I don't think Jeff Bezos has wasted a second of his time worrying about where his initial investment came from. And as you get into circles of people raising money and doing business, you know that a friends and family round is completely normal. When you're starting a business, you go to your friends and family for your first round of investment. And so it's so interesting that you bring that up of like, the wound of, do I deserve this or where did it come from? And it ties back to something that I wanted to mention too, which I loved your comment around, who am I if I don't have this trauma or this story? I feel like a lot of women are holding on to, oh, well, I came from this and I worked my way out of it as a badge of honor. And you gain so much more energy and resource when you release that so that you can be the next version of yourself. It's like a monkey bar, right? You kind of have to swing to the next one and fully let go so you can keep going on.
Absolutely. And you also mentioned something before about being in this gap of your old and your new identity. I like to call it the messy middle. It's like seeing that future version of you, and that messy middle can also be dysregulating because you are constantly faced with either people that you let go of or people that you're no longer surrounding yourself with, or even for me, it was really cutting off a lot of conversation with my parents, as hard as it's, but it would really, like, my partner would say this to me. He's like, you literally act like a little child when you're around your mother. And I'm like, oh my God, you're so right. Like, I feel like I'm no longer the businesswoman, Jess, and I'm no longer me, and I'm no longer powerful. I felt so much of that. And so that messy middle often can become dysregulating, and holding yourself through that growth, and how you say it's always something we're working towards. So you're never fully at that next level. Like, once you're there, you're like, okay, what's next, right? But also allowing yourself to not outsource that belief that when you're there, you're finally going to feel safe. You got to feel safe now with the money that you're making now, with the wealth that you have now, with the success that you have now.
Right.
Because often we think, oh, when I'm over there, I'll finally feel regulated. I thought that. It wasn't. It actually felt even more dysregulating finally achieving my goal, because I never did the work on regulating myself from within. I always needed external things to make me feel safe. But then when I got that, I was like, I thought it was going to look different, and it doesn't.
This is a perfect segue into the last topic that I want to talk about before we get into our rapid fire rich girl questions, which is your area of expertise and something that I think is not only incredibly dysregulating for many women, but is also taboo, which is visibility and being famous, being seen, and how that triggers so many people and why it's so crucial to success. This is your area of expertise, girl. So tell us, what do we need to know? How do we get famous?
Oh, fame is a resource of more impact, of being able to help more people, and of course, of being able to make more money. To me, fame was never something that was bad. And I know for a fact that many little girls, the little girl that you once were, you wanted to be famous. And often it gets a bad reputation. But to me, when the right women, like you and I, good-hearted women who really want to create impact in the world, mm-hmm. are more known, it's going to change the world. That is what I think. Now, often why we hold ourselves back as the good girl is coming in, right? We have the fear of being seen. We're scared to trigger people. We're scared to actually fully be ourselves. A lot of women don't even know who they are because they've been playing the good girl role for so long that when it comes to actually being bold online, actually saying what it is that they want to say, they don't know how to do that because it feels unsafe. But to me, fame is really one of the best things you can do for your business. And it doesn't have to be you as the person. It can't just be really you as the movement, you as the cause, you as the impact that you're going to create. And I'm currently on my own mission. You know, I'm creating the signature series, which is called I Want to Be Famous. And I'm talking about this because it's really a nervous system game. I like to look at Taylor Swift, for example, because, I mean, she's one of the most famous people right now in the world, and her nervous system capacity is insane. If you watched her last documentary about the Eras tour, the thing that stood out to me the most was her nervous system, was her capacity to hold everything and still be present, still be with her, yeah. with her team members, still write mm-hmm. every single person a freaking check. Like she did that for, it took her weeks to do that. She did that. That is nervous system capacity. Being yeah. able to hold fame, money, marketing, like at the end of the day, it's a business that she's running. And being able to hold all of that and still be present with every single person in front of her is really the thing that we can learn a lot from watching women like her.
I couldn't agree more. And I hear this a lot, like, you know, people are, and I really appreciate this, like, so, oh, I love hearing you on the podcast and like, you're such a natural. It did not feel natural when I started this. I had to overcome a lot to be a person not on video, just on audio and put myself out there. And I hear this from a lot of our listeners too, like, well, you know, somebody's going to judge me or who's going to say stuff. And quite frankly, for me, my noticing, I would say for a while was like, the people that are the closest to me were the most judgmental. The people that were like in the outer rings of my life actually became closer to me because they were curious, supportive, and kind. And so all of us have these things to work through. And I'm still going through this now with my industry, with my business, which is in a male-dominated, very traditional industry, real estate development. And I am coming in as the young girl, the creative, and speaking to all of these men who have been building homes for longer than I've been alive and trying to be an authority in that space. Anything that you do in your life that is success-driven or that you want to make an impact in, you have to be visible or else you don't make an impact. And so I'm so obsessed with your I Want to Be Famous series. And can you tell us a little bit about the challenge that you ran?
Yes. So the challenge, I mean, you can still actually watch it because it's on demand now. Okay. It was 4-day challenge on really looking at the nervous system aspect of what it means to become famous, to become known. And so we did, you know, uncover a lot of, you know, wounds that women hold, people hold in general when it comes to visibility. And it's so interesting because at the end of the day, the biggest wound is really that we want to be seen. We want to be acknowledged. And when we're not, mm-hmm. it can really cut deep. You know, for a long time, what you said as well, I used to record a lot of content and I wasn't being seen. And on YouTube, like I had multiple viral videos last year too, and my audience grew on there too. But before that, I was recording video after video after video after video to not only, how you say, get better at what I'm doing. I was like, you know what? I don't even care if one, like I, sometimes there were like 10 views and I know that my dad liked it, my partner's yeah. dad liked it, and my partner liked it. Some people liked it, okay? And I was like, oh, you know, like I'm going to continue doing this. I'm going to get better. And then within a year, I had a viral video and then another one. And then all these new people are coming into my world. And often, you know, we put ourselves out there once or twice and that wound hits, right? Oh, no one sees me. I'm not good enough. I don't know what I'm doing. But you have to also tell your nervous system, I'm safe, while also building the visibility, mm-hmm. while building my business, while getting better, right? And this is something that I really had to teach myself, the skill of learning new things. So I love what you said, because it's practice. It's creating that safety from within as well.
Yeah.
And that wound, when it comes up of not being seen, it's really important to acknowledge that, to say to your little girl, hey, I see you. I'm here for you. It's going to happen. But for now, let's get better at what we do. Let's change whatever we need to change. let's get better. And then after a while, it's going to compound. I really believe in a compound effect in business. And sometimes we don't see it. But then a year from now, if you really put yourself out there every day, if you really do the nervous system work with money, with visibility, I guarantee you, your life is going to be so different a year from now.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I love that reference to compounding too, because you're totally right. I am an example of it. You came across my For You page, what, a week and a half ago? And now you have, you know, an extra 1,000 views on all your videos because I've watched 1,000 of them, I feel. So it's honestly, it's so true. So for anybody listening, I think this challenge that Jessica's put on, I Want to Be Famous, is such a incredible tool. If you're listening to this because you want to create more money in your life and you want to learn how to hold it, like, this is one of the ways. Visibility equals more exposure, equals more opportunity. And it's just a beautiful concept. So thank you for taking something that is, I think, like, taboo and, like, maybe people think frivolous of, like, oh, you want to be famous? Like, that's dumb. I don't think it's dumb at all. I think it's incredibly important for women.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's why, like, I felt weird saying it at first, because when I remember when I recorded my first signature video and I was like, I want to be famous. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like, people are going to think I'm crazy. And then I was like, you know
what?
They're
going to judge me. Yeah.
And exactly. Yeah. That's why I'm doing it, because I know people are going to think that. And I don't freaking care anymore, because life is short. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wake up 10 years from now, not even 10 years from now, like a year from now, and ask myself, just why didn't you do that? Why did you care so much? Mm-hmm. Because you never know who's going to watch you. You never know who you will inspire with your boldness, with saying what everyone else is actually thinking. Now, I do also, for your listeners, if they want to dive deeper into the nervous system, I have also another free masterclass, which is Wealth and Nervous System.
Amazing. Oh, Jessica, this has been incredible. I have taken pages of notes here.
Love it.
Before I let you go, I want to do some rapid fire rich girl questions with you. Just get the first thing that comes to your mind. What is your favorite rich woman ritual?
Ooh, shaking.
Love that.
I shake my body.
What was the last thing you invested in for yourself?
My mentor, mastermind.
Beautiful. What does wealth mean to you today?
Oh my God, wealth means slowing down. Wealth means space. Wealth means being able to not start my day rushing, to play with my dog, go on a walk, do my workout, like really pour into my cup first. That is what wealth is for me.
And what in your life makes you feel the wealthiest?
Travel and being with my partner and my dog.
Same. Absolute same. All of our listeners, you can connect with Jessica. I'm going to put her TikTok, her YouTube, her visibility challenge, her wealth and nervous system challenge, all link in the show notes. Oh my gosh, you guys, you're going to have so much fun diving into her content. Jessica, thank you so much for being here. This was incredible. Look at you investing in your rich life one episode at a time. You're not just listening, you're leveling up. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, or prayers, slide into my inbox at oldmoneypodcast@gmail.com or in my DMs on Instagram at oldmoneypodcast. If this episode made you laugh, think, or write down a single note, please do me a solid and rate, review, and subscribe. It takes less time than your morning scroll, and it helps this show reach more future millionaires. And speaking of growing a network, please share this with your ambitious bestie, your business buddy, or your secretly rich aunt. Please share the gospel of old money, and I will be more grateful than a trust fund kid on distribution day. Thank you for being here. I'm rooting for your bank account, and I will catch you on the next episode of Old Money. Remember, I am not your lawyer, I am not your tax professional, and I am not your financial advisor. The content presented in this podcast is intended to entertain, educate, inspire, and support listeners and their personal and professional development, and does not constitute business, financial, or legal advice.